if we're wanting to create individual experiences for our customers, by default, it's going to be slightly different everywhere anyway. So try and focus on doing the right things in the right spaces, but treating a customer as one customer, but kind of hoping they interact with you in all of those different spaces.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to another of our inspiring guests. Now, regular listeners will know that I do like to start the occasional episode by doing a thank you to someone who said something nice about us online or who got in contact with some interesting feedback. So this time, I am hoping not for this person to trip over whilst running or, you know, crash the car or anything as I read out their name. But a huge thank you to Marcus Winkert from The Real Agency in the UK for doing a whole LinkedIn post about one of our recent episodes. Marcus, thank you so much for that. It's great to have you listening and thank you so much for tuning in to the show. I hope this has both amused you but also not caused you any damage. Okay. I am so pleased to be able to bring you this particular episode. Now, behind the scenes, me and the team work really, really hard to find you interesting, inspiring guests and to get them as far as the recording session. We are forever grateful for every retailer, every brand who is willing to take some time out of their day to be on this show. We invite so many people compared to those that we finally get on, which is completely fine. We're okay with that. And sometimes it takes a while for the diaries to align and then things might crop up and strategies and priorities shift or there's something cool coming up we'll talk about next quarter. You know, it all happens and maybe the guest changes who we're going to be chatting to and suddenly, with no one at fault at all, it's been 2-3 years and we've still not managed to get the episode recorded. With no one at fault, I have hastened to add, this is not Chloe ranting about guests. This is Chloe saying, trying to get across how much effort we put in sometimes to getting the right guests on the show. So getting Bird and Blend on this show has been one of those journeys. So it's so cool to be able to bring you insights from this UK brand who are doing super clever things across their business and in the sustainability space. It's very cool that I get to tick them off the list of brands I really, really want on the podcast. It's very cool I get to bring them to you because I know a lot of you have wanted to hear from them on this show. And the best thing of all is that Mike is an awesome guest. He is going to be talking about what it takes to get to 20 million turnover. He's going to be diving into how they've developed the team, how he's seen his role as a founder change from selling on market stalls through to now having 25 stores across the UK and a thriving e-commerce business too. We'll be talking about culture. We'll be talking about customer experience, the real full-on intangible customer experience stuff, how you do that in stores and replicate it online. We'll be talking a little bit about fulfillment. We will be talking about, if you listen right to the end, you'll find out what his sales targets are for his stores. I mean, we're getting quite granular whilst also looking at some big picture cultural team and business development stuff. You're going to like this episode. In fact, you're going to love this episode. I thoroughly enjoyed recording it. And like I said, please listen to the end because Mike's sharing some serious value bombs in his top tips too. And now to introduce our special guest. Mike Turner is the founder and MD of Bird and Blend Tea Company, developing, producing and selling the UK's largest range of unique and exciting tea blends. Founded in 2012, Bird and Blend are on track to drive sales of 20 million in the next year. They are selling internationally via their Shopify store and via their 25 high street stores across the UK. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Chloe.
First off, congrats on hitting, you know, being very, very close to hitting the big 2-0. That must be very cool milestone to be on track for.
Yeah, it's funny. It's one of those numbers which when you start and you're, you know, on a market stall as we started, sounds mentally big. And when you start to approach it and things feel very, very small, and you're still referring to yourself as a small startup business.
So you mentioned that you know, the business started with a market stall. Was it via Bird and Blend? Was that your first entry into the world of e-commerce, or did you have other e-commerce experience before you started this business?
No, it was our first entry into it. And actually, we were called Bluebird Tea at the time. But I guess it was kind of in the early days of when e-commerce was becoming so accessible for a D2C business. It was kind of Shopify, I think, had just launched, although we chose BigCommerce at the time and went from there. So no, to be honest, neither Chrissy, who's my co-founder, or myself had any experience in anything, really. We'd worked lots of jobs, but they were, for me, I'd worked in bars and hotels. I'd been a ski instructor for a while, did debt collection for a while in a call center. Chrissy had worked at the, you know, local bank branch and had fallen into the tea industry.
So you were doing the market stalls. At what point did it become obvious to go e-commerce? Was it fairly early on? You went, we're going to be multi-channel, we're going to do physical retail, and we're going to do e-commerce.
Yeah, right from the very beginning. So interestingly, we had the initial idea with Bird and Blend was actually to try and be more drinks focused, sort of looked at what companies like Starbucks had done and thought there's no reason people can't do that with tea. But we'll create some blends and then we'll sell those alongside it. And we straight away thought that needs to be online as well as on markets at the time as it developed to be more face-to-face channels. And then we switched across to be more and more blend focused, partially as we realized how powerful online could be for us and what a key part of the business it was going to become.
Got you. And we're obviously, well, what? She's just trying to do the maths in her head. We're 12 years on, 13 years on from when you began. So you still got it, still got the mental maths game almost. I mean, obviously it's changed a lot, but what for you has been the biggest change in the business in those 13 years from the market stall to being the managing director and running this business with 25 high street stores?
The biggest change is the shift from it just being us doing it. And, you know, it was us everywhere, us trying to, you know, we never really used agencies or anything like that. So for building a website, Chrissy was on YouTube learning how to build a website. I was learning how to do the bookkeeping. We were very hands-on with absolutely everything. And over time, as that's been delegated more and more, because you just can't do it, and how that style of management has changed. So the biggest change over the years has been in what we're doing. We started with very hands-on everything. So we didn't have we had no money to start with, so we had no agencies. Chrissy kind of learned how to build a website on BigCommerce using YouTube. I figured out how to do bookkeeping and supply chain and, I mean, how to pack orders and take them to a post office is quite an easy thing to learn. But, you know, learn all of that. You then go through the motions as you can't do everything yourself. When we opened the first store, that was a big moment where you need to hire a team and you start to manage a team. And then over time, as that team grows, how your management style grows. And we're now in a position where we've got a fantastic leadership team who know far more than I do about everything. And it's a very different style of management. So that change has been the biggest one for me to see.
Often you'll come across business leaders, I suppose, for want of a better word, who discover they have a skill set at different stages of a business. You know, like you come across the person who's great at the 0 to 1 million, or who's great at the 1 million to 5, or the 5 to 10, or the 10 to 20, or the 50 plus. It's unusual to find someone who can adapt through the full journey of a business. You know, often if you see a business that's stalled and got stuck, it's because the owner's still involved in things they really should have let go of, or they potentially should have even sold the business and gone off to do something else. You're clearly very successfully sticking with it. Have you got any tips for anyone who's trying to work out how to stick with it as they go through these different growth stages? Is it about learning? Is it about getting out of your own way? Is it about delegating? What's the key thing to get right? Massive question for you.
Massive question. I suspect if you sort of saw things internally, you may not say clearly succeeding with it. And, you know, as we said at the start, in reality, although 20 million seems like an enormous number, when we compare it to those kind of market stall days, actually, we are still an extremely small business. So I feel like I can only give, you know, one third, one quarter of an answer here. And then maybe ask me again in 10, 15 years. But the big one is learning. I think you need to be aware that every single day your business is, your job is bigger than it ever has been before. And so the idea that that you can know what you're doing is just a fantasy. So you need to be constantly learning, constantly questioning everything about yourself, constantly listening to the opinions of different people, and constantly self-evaluating, I think, figuring out the bits which you're weak at and trying to find ways to cover those. I think, as with anything really in life, if you try and sit statically and say, do you know what, I'm really good at creating tea blends, that's not enough. That's irrelevant a few weeks later, let alone 10 years later.
So that constant adaption through being open to learning, being not kind of pigeonholing yourself too early and just adapting and listening to the business and then giving it what it needs of you and giving it what it needs of other things as you go along.
Exactly. And I think also there's an element that I've at least found really useful of having some humbleness of you meet a lot of people who are founders and they've got these huge egos. They think I've made this happen. Whereas I've kind of always come at it from the perspective of there's a lot of luck. We've made a lot of correct decisions and we've taken advantage of a lot of opportunities which have given us the opportunity to be lucky. And those were deliberate decisions. It's something we continue doing today. Ultimately, I'm not in the MD role in our business because I've interviewed for that and been chosen to be because I'm the best person in the world to do it. I just happen to be one of two kids who started a tea company. I'm the one who's still here coming every day, which is kind of why I'm there. And that doesn't mean I'm any smarter than anybody else around the business. I think that's really crucial because you need to be listening to what everybody else is saying. So the most valuable times I often find are times where I was in our production room this week for a couple of hours packing various different bits in there, but seeing how that works and writing lists of what the team are asking, ditto going into the stores and that sort of thing, and being that kind of sounding board of just trying to understand what's going on where and connect it together rather than thinking you have all the answers.
And clearly team is being mentioned a lot, people's being mentioned a lot. So that's one of those skills that pretty much no one seems to have when they first start out because you've never been tested. Some people find it innate. Some people find that building a team is something they really have to work at and learn, both on the recruitment and on the developing them and keeping them in the business side of things. Is that something you found came naturally to you, or has that been something which you've brought in outside help to help you with, or you've done a lot of learning around to make sure the team are, you know, filling those gaps that you can't fill and helping push the business forward?
All of the above. Interestingly, actually, kind of, so I'd been in running bars and that sort of thing before. So that kind of style of managing shifts and being quite high intensity, I think I was all right at and I quite enjoyed. So when we kind of first started and you open your first store, and it's a bit like being on The Apprentice, that you kind of, we should do this, we should do this. I think I was all right at in terms of management. We then went through a kind of period as you're hiring store managers and that sort of thing, where I don't think I'm not a very good manager. It's always a running joke with my team that just not to expect to get all the stuff that I would expect them to be doing with their teams because they're going to need to remind me of it. But what I have found is, so I sort of went through a period where you have kind of, I guess, earlier in the career, but still in management type roles, people who need development, they need support, there's a whole sort of world of things you need to put around them and mentor them as a manager. And I wasn't good at that. I think partially because I hadn't been in their shoes. I couldn't say, here is how you go from being a finance assistant to finance manager or whatever, because I've just learned how to bookkeep off YouTube. But what I've then found as we've had a senior leadership team, who there's no way that, I, you know, there's no point in me sitting with our digital director, for instance, and giving any advice on the joke I made before was what colour the buy button should be, right? Yeah. But, you know, the technical aspects of a website. But what I have realized that I'm able to do is kind of connect the dots on, if this is going on here, here's how it will maybe impact this bit of a business. That's not necessarily because that's a skill of mine, but it's because I've been in the business. I've done every job in the business, so I get how it affects. So I then actually find it a lot easier these days because it's a group of people who are pretty incentivized. They're pretty smart. They can accept when they start. And I just say, by the way, don't expect me to be a fantastic manager. You tell me what I need. Be honest with me. I'll be honest with you. You're fine to say you could have told me that. That's allowed, you know. But that kind of world of trying to create a place where people feel comfortable enough to challenge you to, I guess, to thrive, to just be free, you know, get out of their way, to Richard Branson saying, isn't it? To hire good people and then just get out of their way, I find quite easy. People early on in their careers, hiring them and getting out of their way isn't what they want. They want support and mentoring and training.
So we won't find you back mentoring the call centre team or running a store anytime soon?
Odd days. I'd say I'm good at odd days, and then I find another project to get distracted easily, perhaps.
An interesting thing you mentioned to me before we got started on, before we hit the record button, was that you're still running all fulfillment, all warehousing internally in the business. And a lot of businesses would have outsourced that by this point to reduce complexity, reduce the amount of assets they've got tied up in land, space, all this sort of thing, especially when a business has such a... I'm assuming you have quite a Christmas peak, as your products can be seen as gifts. He's nodding, everybody.
I'm nodding.
Christmas peak. So, so often when there is that peak, there's a... like, right, someone else can deal with the problem of peak, the staffing up and all the rest of it. So what's been your rationale for continuing to do it all in-house?
Yeah, great question. And thanks for reminding me it's a podcast. I can't just nod. I think there's two parts to the answer. One part is that fundamentally the reason we wanted to start a business was about people, that Chrissy and I had worked lots of jobs where we felt that we could have done so much but didn't have that opportunity to do it. And so we thought, if we can create an environment where we give people an opportunity to do great things, that will create something brilliant. And so naturally that means we want to have people rather than outsource things. Naturally, we want to learn how things go. You know, my reason for keeping doing this every day is I enjoy learning. So learning how supply chain works, whatever it is that we're doing, which other people would outsource, is really interesting to me. So there's that kind of people side. The second side, I guess, is to do with what is our product. Now, in the intro, you talked about creating these amazing blends of tea. What I'm constantly saying to our team is we're not selling tea. What we're selling is a fantastic experience for our customers. If customers want fantastic tea, you can get fantastic tea from Tesco or Walmart or wherever you want to get it these days. There has to be a reason for a customer to come to us, and that reason is because we're creating some sort of experience that they identify with, which will then make them buy the product as a souvenir of it. So it could almost be pens, or to take the first thing that I see in front of me, or anything. And so because we're all about that experience, it's really important we're able to own the entire experience that the customer gets. And that goes right down to when they open their order, there's a handwritten note by one of our team, which started out when I was packing all of the orders. I would write, "Thank you for your order." That still carries on now. And there are these little touches that we try and build in, which would be very, very difficult to outsource to another supplier. And I think would lose level of authenticity if it was.
There is that culture bit, which has such an intangible impact on customer experience. And when you're an experience-based brand, then to outsource your experience, I totally get where you're coming from with that being a need to keep it in-house. Now, one of the key areas where many brands fall down on the experience side of things is physical retail and e-commerce, and trying to make it feel the same across the two, from the syncing of stock and customer information and the techie side of it through to the intangible side of it. You've obviously been doing those, both of those, almost since day one, and you started off with the physical retail side of things. How have you gone about trying to keep that experience the same, especially as you're moving from the south into other areas of the country where maybe the culture doesn't feel the same? How have you maintained it?
Yeah, it's a constant journey and a constant challenge. And that question is the biggest thing which keeps me awake at night. And you know, we've had a pretty good growth rate, but in some ways we've artificially kept it slower because we've wanted to make sure that we maintain that consistent experience. And so it's something we're always trying to do, and I don't necessarily have full answers for it. I think part of the way that we've been able to do it so far is that from the very beginning, we have been totally omnichannel. When we were literally going to markets, I would go to the market and I'd have a little sign-up sheet where I'd ask people to write down their email addresses, at a point where no one... Now it'd be weird if people weren't doing that. At that point, it was weird that people were doing it. And I was just as obsessed with getting those email addresses as I was about the cash in the till. I think partially because tea is a pretty cheap in the scheme of things product. It's pretty hard to pay back, you know, the driving, the couple of hours, paying for a pitch, all of the things which come into it. So I kind of needed to say, well, as long as I can cover my costs in terms of the cash, if I get these email addresses, I know they're building my business. Now, that kind of philosophy has been transferred into one store, and then as we've grown into others, of the stores are here to create a great experience and a connection with the customer. The whole thing which we're trying to do is to build a relationship with that customer so they keep on shopping with us, whether that's in the store or online, but us being able to communicate with them is key to that. Over the years, I've learned phrases like customer lifetime value and CRM and all these things, which makes it seem a lot less clever because this whole industry is based on it, but it felt clever to us at the time. But I think really trying to stay true to that. Then I think the second one is accepting that it doesn't have to be exactly the same everywhere. If we want to create individual experiences for our customers and personalized experiences for our customers, then by default, it's going to be slightly different everywhere anyway. And there's some things which just clearly work really well in one environment. So we do takeaway drinks in the stores. Clearly, we could do some sort of bottled weird version online, but it's never going to have the same impact as watching one of our teammates, as we call our teams in the stores, shaking a cocktail shaker to make an iced tea for you. And ditto online, there's certain events and things which you can do which would be very, very difficult to do in stores. So try and focus on doing the right things in the right spaces, but treating the customer as one customer, but kind of hoping they interact with you in all of those different spaces.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Mike, are you ready for the top tips?
I am.
Excellent. Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to give you two different ones. They've got the same basic thing that they're trying to do, and it's more to do with the size of the business of your listener. The first is Start With Why by Simon Sinek, which I'm sure almost, it feels like a very cliche response to that, but it's all about knowing why your business exists. And I think in the early days when you're doing everything, it's so crucial that you have that understanding and you're being driven by something more than just the money. And then the second one is for businesses which are a little bit further along, where it becomes more about communicating that. And it is Lencioni's The Advantage, which actually is all about organizational clarity. But really what organizational clarity means is being able to tell other people what your why is and keep them engaged with the path that you're trying to take the business down.
I love that. A two-stage answer. So there you go, guys. Depending on what stage you're at, that's the one to read. And I have to say, as with all cliches, they're cliches because they're true.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why Start With Why is kind of omnipresent in the business world, is because it really works.
Yes.
Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think I'm not going to surprise you with my answer here. It's retail stores. So our retail stores are without a doubt our biggest marketing channel. We have a chance to interact with customers, walk past the stores, hand them samples, talk to them all about the brand. Before then, they hopefully become engaged, whether online or in those stores.
So many forget, I think, or forget to really utilize physical stores as marketing channels, or forget to, you know, put some of that cost against the marketing budget, you know, theoretically or actually on the P&L. For anyone who wants to kind of grow that site, you know, really focus on retailers marketing, any little cheeky tips we can get out of you, bonus ones here?
Well, I think firstly, that point you made around how you sit on the P&L, my attitude has always been that with any marketing things, really, the stores are just a brilliant example of this. Anything you can do where you're interacting with a new customer and it's not costing you money, it's revenue neutral, has to be a good thing. So early days, markets, festivals, that sort of thing. These days, my attitude, our retail is profitable and does do okay. But my attitude has always been, if we can open a store there and it breaks even, that's fine because it's interactive. It's opening up the world to a whole load of new customers. So that's the first one. I totally agree with you. Seeing revenue channels as marketing, or in fact, everything as marketing, and factoring that in. And then the second one, which maybe a more of a tip type one. I think I'm totally passionate about customer experience and giving your teams the power to be able to create moments for those customers. So if you're going to go into stores, don't then understaff them. Don't worry about cost cutting there. This is a marketing investment, having what seems to most retailers too many people on your shop floor, because it's allowing them to have those conversations. If you're making all of that investment in getting the store right, then make the most of the opportunity, you know?
It's so easy to pay lip service to experiential retail and then, you know, open it with the right number of staffing, and then over the next 6 months go, oh, it costs a bit, doesn't it? And then it gets rolled back and rolled back and rolled back, and all of a sudden it's just another store with some nice fittings. It's like...
I think that's exactly it, the nice fittings. The stores which do this, and there's a bit of a trend for it at the moment, isn't there, all of these kind of digital companies are opening stores. They've paid 5-6 times what we pay in shop fit, and they're these beautifully designed shops, whereas ours are a little bit scrappy. The early ones were done by me. They're done on a bit of a shoestring. But then these beautiful shops have teams who are playing on their phones, who are not engaged with the customers, who just think that they're there to be a self-checkout, basically. Whereas the bit which we don't compromise on is you go into our store and the teams will be smiling, they'll be chatting to you, they'll be creating something in there.
Love that. Oh, right. Tool top tip before we completely tangent into the world of retail strategy. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
The cool tool that I'm going to say, I feel like, again, is perhaps a little bit of a boring one for your listeners, because I'm I don't want to say I'm backwards to technology, but I'm not super at the forefront of what's going on. But I use Boomerang on my email, which I find so useful it's a tool which allows you to get an email to come back into your inbox if you don't get a response to it. So it's very easy when you're popping things over to people to remember that you've popped something over, and probably very frustrating for members of my team that they can't just not respond to things which I actually want to know an answer to, because I will remember.
Yeah, so many people don't tap into the Gmail email extension stuff, and Boomerang is a very cool one. Yeah, huge game changer for many, I know. So I love that one. That's definitely not a dull one at all. Carbon top tip to finish off. What's your favourite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I don't know if it's favourite, but certainly the most effective way is in looking at the logistics. So we're quite big into our carbon mapping and all that sort of thing. And the biggest chunks on there by some way are the shipping in, which the single easiest thing which any business can do, or single most effective thing which any business can do, is not using air freight to bring stuff in. You should be planning your supply chain well enough that you don't need to fly stuff in. It's a lot cheaper and it's a lot better for the environment. But then the shipping out to the customers, which of course for international, the reality is you probably do need to use air freight unless you're at a stage where you can have DCs around the world. But even for, you know, your domestic customers, we use some firms which are zero emissions for various cities around the UK. That makes a big difference to our emissions. In terms of favourite, we've got a nice set of solar panels on the roof of our warehouse, which means it's all carbon neutral. But it's perhaps not actually as effective as the stuff we do with the logistics, which is a little bit boring, but makes a big difference.
But it's as you say with the logistics, especially the getting the goods in. If you're a bit planning, then you can save a lot of money as well as saving a lot of carbon, which I think is where sustainability and carbon saving and all these sorts of things really pay off, is when it makes a massive difference to the bottom line as well as the planet, which it so often does. So so thank you for bringing up that dull but super important one. Mike, thank you so much for all your insights in this episode. Before we let you go, though, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you, your beautiful teas, and your business on the web and social media, please?
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Chloe. Yep, so we're online. We're at birdandblendtea.com, and we're on all of the social media channels you can expect and I've probably never heard of if you search for Bird and Blend Tea. And actually, where you'll see great examples of our teams having fun and doing brilliant things. And then we have stores now in most major cities in the UK. And you said we have 25. We've got another 6 in the pipeline. at the moment. So certainly over the next 12 months, will be even more of them available. But if you check online, but they're in most of the major retail destinations you'd expect us to be these days. Town centres rather than shopping centres.
Unsurprisingly. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been super insightful and it's been a real pleasure chatting with you. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Chloe. Cheers.
I was having another chat with Mike just after we kind of hung up the recording, I suppose. And I'm going to repeat it and say what I said to you guys, which was it's really easy to do lots of episodes about this marketing method and that marketing method and another one about how Facebook ads grows your business and all the rest of it. But what I love about chats like the one I just had with Mike is that we get to the real solid foundational stuff. If you don't get it right, you're not going to be able to build your business like they've built Bird and Blend, where you're looking at the team and how we change our role to enable the team and the business to grow in the way we need it to grow, how we make the right decisions, not necessarily based on the hard-nosed, immediately apparent facts, but by looking at the bigger picture and remembering what our culture is, what our experience is, what we're trying to achieve with the business. In their case, yeah, we're not outsourcing fulfillment. We're keeping it in-house because we want to help develop people and give them better roles, better jobs, better lives. We also want the experience to be a key part of why people keep buying our products. So why would we outsource fulfillment? It would make no sense. And then in the stores, having the clarity of this is about customer recruitment. This is about creating the culture and the experience that makes people go, this is the tea brand I want to keep buying from, whether it's online, whether it's offline, and really making sure that they're growing in a way that enables them to keep delivering that, hence their continuing to be a very successful company. So really thoroughly enjoyed that chat with Mike. I hope you all did too. You can get your hands on our notes from this episode, including those brilliant top tips and links to what we mentioned by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use the direct episode short link. That's ecmp.info/the number of this episode. When you get to the website, why not add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of those other things we share to help you improve your business. And if you liked this episode, then why not go and check out, slight curveball, episode 231, where the subject is again tea, but this time I'm chatting with Pucker about how they're making Amazon work for them. So a very different approach to selling tea online. You could also, we didn't get into the B Corp status of Bird and Blend, but I think if you know much about B Corp and sustainability, it was kind of endemic in everything he was talking about. It was there. But if you would like to hear more stories from B Corp businesses, then head to ecmp.info/B Corp, where you'll go to the page on the website where all our B Corp stories sit. I bring you a new interview every single week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including becoming more sustainable. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.